Hey, does it still count as a metaphor if you just describe reality but put it in the future and have robots? Because that's all that's going on in Elysium, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America, and I'm joined by a acceptable Southern detective team of movie experts. Like, none of us are Morgan Freeman, but we're all, none of us are the bad guy either. We're all doing our jobs and getting close to the killer. There's Camila Adams. Yes. Hi.
How y'all doing?
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy meeting Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my God, it's going to be the best thing ever. That's going on my tombstone.
Talk to Jeff Goldblum this one time?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, happy birthday.
Thanks.
And here's Robin Hitchcock.
Hi, that's me.
Whose birthday is some other time.
May.
That's right.
Okay, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
So, we ended up on Elysium. First, Camila and I were talking about this before you arrived, Robin. We need to decide what the rules actually are.
We're going to firm up those rules.
The rules are irrelevant. I will never veto anything after the journey that we went on last week.
Seriously, this is because I damn near quit the show.
Yeah.
Because of this movie.
Let's simplify a little bit. Let's go back. We each get one veto per calendar year, should we choose to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will even add in that we can gladiator style unanimously everybody in the room decide.
Mm-hmm.
If no one wants any part of it and we all thumbs down, we can draw again.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a veto, but that's it.
Now,
right. We cannot stack these things and then invent new rules. Also, if it's a Tuesday on the full moon, we can pick any movie. No, those are the only two rules. One per year or a gladiator, and then you have to take the next one.
And there's so we can't do what we did last week.
No, that was dumb.
Okay, so one person could say, I'm using my veto, or we can say, hey, is there a unanimous decision to reject this?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, do we have a limit on number of unanimous rejections?
If we feel like we're doing it too much.
Okay.
And what we learned is that doing any of this is kind of a bad idea.
Right.
Because if you heard last week, we started with The Last Samurai, which probably would have been the best of these three options.
Probably would have been okay.
Then we ended on The American, which was probably the best movie of the three, but really uninteresting. And then we landed on Elysium, which no one was happy with.
Correct.
So let this be a harsh lesson to us about vetoing. It can get worse.
That's how you learn.
So I chose to watch all three movies.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Damn, girl. You are.
Part of it was because Elysium's the only one I had seen before.
Okay.
And I like seeing movies I've never seen. And also, I wanted to know how angry I should be.
Okay.
And
how angry should you be, Robin?
The thing that makes me most upset about us not doing The Last Samurai is this could have been a 75% Tony Goldwyn podcast.
Son of a bitch! Are you kidding me right now?
I am not kidding you. Oh, he plays the bad guy in The Last Samurai.
I feel like we are being guided by Tony Goldwyn's spirit.
Exactly.
Even though he's not dead. But we're being guided by
him. He astral projects and controls our podcast draws.
Clearly.
And we have spited him.
I'm also soft removing anything that we veto or skip or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I'll like soft remove from the thing. Like if we land on it again, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
But like if we draw today and it goes Last Samurai, I'm like, no. But if we draw 2 years from now and it's Last Samurai, then we'll have a conversation.
Okay.
But in the meantime, before we get to recapping my 60-second plot summary of Elysium, Robin, thoughts on both The American and The Last Samurai?
Yeah.
The Last Samurai is, you know, tropey garbage, but enjoyable tropey garbage.
Okay.
Tom Cruise is, first of all, the sexiest he's ever been in that. He is like, I don't know, I have a weakness for long hair. And he's got like just the right amount of long hair. Very appealing in that movie. Ken Watanabe is really good.
Mm.
And it's very pretty. And there's also some good fight choreography, which I love.
Okay.
But it's tropey garbage. And it's
45
minutes too long.
Hmm.
Oh. The American is fine.
So if you saw The American in a small, quaint art house theater with a lot of coffee in you, so you wouldn't get sleepy.
I was gonna say, like, with espressos and cigarettes.
And yeah, and just, like, thought about it a lot, you'd probably be like, oh, that was a pretty good movie.
It
but, like,
reminded me of the movie Ronin, which is funny because of the whole samurai connection, but not good. It needed some car chases. Let's put it that way.
So basically, we should have just stuck with the
Yeah, it has a great last scene. Okay. I would have spent the entire podcast talking about the great last scene.
Wow.
So Last Samurai would have been the best option?
It would have been.
All right. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. This is all my fault.
It's fine.
And Last Samurai, I don't know if, like, would people be interested in Last Samurai? Is there a thing about Last Samurai?
I mean, I think that people are very aware of, like, white savior bullshit and would be interested to hear us talk about it.
I can't believe that today's star, Matt Damon, did basically the same thing a good 13 years later with Great Wall.
Yeah, okay, but that movie is kind of awesome.
Is it?
Like, again, tropey garbage. If they hinted, if there was no Matt Damon and it was just the people in their China fighing monsters outside of the Great Wall, it would be like one of my favorite movies.
Let's
mean, you know, not like this is amazing cinema, but like in the way that Pacific Rim is amazing and fun, it's like that.
We will definitely get to the segment that Robin and I newly decided is called, what did we decide? Oh, Trigger Warning. Trigger Happy. That's
trigger
what it
happy.
Was. Trigger Happy.
What is this?
Whenever we talk about the problematic bullshit aspect of apparently literally every movie we'll ever talk about. Like, does it? There's this weird counter argument that comes up whenever it's things set in, especially Japan or China, with an American lead, where someone points out, obviously another white person, points out, yeah, but in Japan and China, they don't care about this subject at all. Culturally, this idea is a product of what very rightfully offends Asian Americans, but if you ask a Japanese person, they're just thrilled that Scarlett Johansson is in Ghost in the Shell.
Really?
I have heard that argument. That,
really?
That, like, they don't see that as an invasion.
Really?
Really?
I find that hard to believe.
We'll look into this more when we land on Ghost in the Shell.
That wasn't number one, was it?
Maybe.
It probably was.
That said, we won't burn out on this topic because I'm sure that there's plenty
to... We're going to have to touch on it again in discussing Elysium.
Right.
So let's
get back
to into it.
All right.
You're right. Ghost in the Shell was not number one. Robin, are you timing? This is my first attempt.
Yes.
We've all succeeded but Aaron, and that's why he's not here. He quit. No. Aaron couldn't be here today. I do have his thoughts via text message later on.
Oh, okay. But, interesting. I like it.
I'm glad that's an option.
Robin, say go, and I will summarize the plot of Elysium.
Stop it.
Go.
Matt Damon is an ex-con trying to walk the line in future L.A., where the 1% have all fucked off to space and left Earth to get marginally worse than it is today. When he's exposed to a lethal dose of radiation in a completely preventable workplace accident, he and his buddy Rogue One plan an elaborate heist that will score them a flight to Elysium, the giant orbiting country club where healthcare is free and everyone is white or Indian. But uh-oh, he brainjacked the wrong douchebag, and now both angry Charlton Copley and House of Cards mode Jodie Foster are after him. Hopefully the semi-heartwarming ending will make you forget that absolutely none of this was justified or made any sense.
Great job.
40 seconds.
Perfect. And that's most definitely that's a good solid wrap up.
I'm really glad you pointed out it was a completely preventable workplace accident.
What was like
organic matter detected, but no automatic shutoff.
Right.
No
bad. And like his boss is like, go in there and no point is it justified like what the alternative is. Like, can we press a button and then there's got to be a door open button where you could like shove, bing, and then we're back and no one has to die.
Nope. I'm assuming also, apparently they lose a lot of people this way.
So unfortunately, my brother-in-law was in town for one day yesterday. And
so
I was
you
like,
spent it watching Elysium.
I was like, sorry, bro, we got to watch Elysium. He was very understanding, but he's a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. And when this happened and they're like, you have 5 days to live. I was like, is this how this works? That you get 5 days to walk around and be relatively healthy and hale and then you collapse.
Boom.
And he was like, well, if you don't take your drugs, yes. So I asked him, I did not ask him to follow up because I was like, let's just get through this.
Let's just survive.
Yeah.
Just survive somehow.
Yeah.
Mary Beth, my girlfriend, made it through maybe 35 minutes and was just like, this is dumb. Why are they, this doesn't make any sense. No, I'm going to bed. Which is the correct reaction.
Right. Yeah.
The general problem with this movie, well, the first problem, as I touched on last week, is that this is a movie about apartheid with almost no black people in it. Mm-hmm. But the second part of the problem is that so much of this is like motivated by like rule of cool, but none of it's actually cool, right?
Yes.
Like, so he becomes a cyborg and they put a TV monitor in the back of his head.
Doesn't really do anything.
Never is used.
No.
And how would you even use it?
I have no fucking idea what happened in any of this movie. Like, right. I'm just like, I was just trying to survive it. I'm going in, first of all, with the whole fact that, okay, we get the whole Earth has gone to shit. The 1% has fled the planet. And now we're left with an entire Spanish-speaking population.
Including Matt Damon.
Yes. Am I supposed to believe Matt Damon is Latino?
I'm pretty sure you are.
Son of a bitch. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I hate this movie even more.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that extensively. First, our segment. Yes, this went to number one. How and why and when and what the hell was going on.
Oh, I totally forgot about all this abortion.
Who saw this?
Not that many people, but enough. It was released August 9th of 2013, the 26th number one film of 2013. Won the weekend with $29.8 million. A slow weekend, but the whole top four was debuting. It beat We're the Millers, which was perfectly acceptable.
That's not a bad movie.
By less than $3 million. We're the Millers was in second, followed by Planes, like Cars, but
oh,
Planes.
Oh, boy.
And Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters was in fourth place. Elysium would immediately fall to third in its second weekend to the debuting Lee Daniels, the Butler, in the top spot.
I like that movie.
Elysium stayed in the top 10 for 6 weeks. The final domestic take was $93 million against a budget of $115 million. It did better globally. It made nearly $200 million. But it did not do well in director Neil Blomkamp's native South Africa, where it made less than $700,000. Robin?
I wonder why.
Robin lived in South Africa, everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Were you there at this time?
I was. I did not see it when I lived there. I rented it when I lived there. Mm. My best guess is, did you look up when they released it there?
Because
sometimes things come out weirdly late abroad. And if it's a bad movie and it comes out like a month later than it came out in the rest of the world, like, we know. We have the internet.
You already figured it out.
You know what I mean? Like, the internet tells us this movie isn't worth your time and no one goes. The other guess I have is that he didn't film it in South Africa and there may have been some resentment there.
Okay, yeah, so is he, like claimed as yay, look at our guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that mainly extends to District 9.
100%. I have no idea what he was up to before District 9.
Well, he's only made three movies. It's only District 9, this, and Chappie.
Speaking of Chappie,
yeah.
Every time there was a robot on screen, you know the tweet that's like whispering to my girlfriend while watching Chappie? That's Chappie. I said, that's Chappie every single time a robot appeared in this movie. And my husband and my brother-in-law did not get mad at me. So
thank you, family.
Yeah.
That was very kind.
Yeah.
Well, his output has just declined very quickly over three films. District 9 was a good-sized hit, more than $115 million on, like, no budget.
Right.
Elysium,
Best Picture nomination, et cetera.
That was the big beneficiary of the first year that
right.
there was an expanded field for Best Picture, when they went from 5 to 6 to 10.
And that was the thing that everybody pointed to. Like, isn't it so great we've expanded the field? Because something like District 9 is getting nominated.
Right. Very little like District 9 has been nominated since, but it was good for District 9, which is a better movie than this. Elysium did a little bit worse. Chappie only made $31.5 million, and Rotten Tomatoes has followed. District 9, 90%. Elysium, 68%, higher than I would have thought.
Me too.
Chappie, 31%. Quickly, Elysium is not among the top 10 films of Matt Damon's career. Any guesses? The biggest film of Matt Damon's career, box office-wise?
One of the Bourne movies.
Good Will Hunting.
It's The Martian.
Oh!
$228 million. followed by Bourne Ultimatum, Saving Private Ryan, Ocean's 11, and Bourne Supremacy.
Oh, yeah, Ocean's 11.
I always forget he's in that.
Elysium is his 13th biggest hit. It is, however, this is depressing, the 5th biggest movie of Jodie Foster's career.
Really?
Is Elysium.
That makes me very upset.
Come on now.
You know what else makes me very upset? Mm-hmm. How bad Jodie Foster is in this.
Oh my God, is she supposed to have an accent or not?
Yes. So I think I thought about this extensively. Uh-huh. So she has a vaguely South African accent, which I don't think other people would notice if you've never lived there.
I just assumed French.
Right. So there's like when she says yilly, that is the way I'm very bad at accents. But that's the way that a white Cape Townian woman would say that word. Yeah. But I think that what was going on in her brain, it wasn't just that she was attempting a South African accent and getting lazy about it. Mm. I think that she was like, this is the future. Accents would change in the same way that people, you know, today don't sound like people 100 years ago.
Right.
I think that she is like, oh, it's a blend of different high class accents.
It's like this movie didn't deserve you, Jodie. I mean, that was far too much thinking on her part for this movie.
Yeah.
Well, and she doesn't. Part of it is she doesn't act anymore. This is one of the 4 movies she has made in the last 10 years.
Oh, really?
I like Total Artemis.
Oh, me too.
I really like Total Artemis.
Like, yeah. She is the best thing in that movie.
I texted you. I was like, this is my John Wick. Because John Wick is not my John Wick.
I love John Wick.
No one saw Hotel Artemis. I was very sad about it.
I was so excited about that movie. I went to the theater to see it like opening weekend. I was super stoked.
I
pre-ordered it, the DVD.
This, the Beaver and Carnage. Are her
Carnage was pretty good.
Are her only movies in the 2010s. Her top 5 are Silence of the Lambs, Maverick, Contact, Panic Room, followed by Elysium.
Contact reunion here with her and William Fichtner.
I love William Fichtner.
Nice. Yeah.
And he is, well, when we get to the scoring portion, he makes up most of the points.
Yeah. Right.
That I gave this movie.
Extremely well cast in this movie.
The whole quote, now if you'll excuse me, I'll have to not speak to you people any longer.
Yeah.
That's how I'm going to end all my conversations from now on.
And apparently really high in the IMDb trivia is when he went to like the foreman of the plant and was like, you're breathing on me. Cover your mouth. That was an ad lib. Just him knowing his character.
Love it.
It's fabulous.
Other than that, this movie doesn't work. So where to begin? Like, my biggest objection is at no point is anything about the world they build even like halfway justified. Like they're just like, yeah, this is how it is now. With no explanation, with no like, here's why, without even saying like, it's expensive to, like, there's none of that. To the point at the end where they overthrow the government by hacking, and not in the way that happens now, but like just literally by being like boop boop beep, your government's gone.
No, yeah, like saying not changing the word illegal to legal, and that first of all, secondly, and I'm thinking, can't they just change it back after they've overthrown the government? Like, can't they just come back
in? Of course not.
This is a movie that assumes that if you go and change your Facebook status from Secretary of Immigration to President, the actual President will be like, oh, darn, and go away.
Right, exactly. It's not – okay, and I have this question because quite honestly, I was not – after a while, I stopped really paying attention to this movie.
Valid.
Yeah. Good choice.
I know. Okay, so Matt Damon's character is – he gets the radiation. He's got 5 days to live, and now he's hell-bent on getting to Elysium. Like, I know all his life he's wanted to do that. So now he's like, it's super important I have to do this. He's willing to go take on this, like, ridiculous mission from underground cholos and whatnot. And he doesn't care. It's a life-threatening blah, blah, blah. He just really needs to get there. Why? Is this like a bucket list Disneyland type thing? Or does he have people up there?
Because the med bays can heal them and they don't have med bays on Earth.
Okay, so he was trying to get healed.
His own life.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Oh my God.
But even that, like when we get to the everything's fine now ending, they send the like fleet of easy free med bays that can easily treat everyone and we're sitting there the whole time to Earth. At apparently no cost to anyone. So, like, why was it just like, screw you, you guys?
I think that it's intentional. I think that it, again, this whole like apartheid thing, it's like, it's not that there aren't the resources. It's that they want to deny them of people who they deem lower class.
So it, this is just a straight up apartheid metaphor that doesn't read because of who right. you cast.
Right. I guess so.
Bingo.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is.
All right. Like, cool.
I mean, because we see like the refugee ships, like first 20 minutes in there, the refugees are trying to come in and they just blow them up like three or four different ships in the air.
The way I read it was like, this was meant to be an allegory, but he's not good enough at allegory to even change anything. So it's like, in the future, rich people have access to healthcare and poor people don't. It's like, no, that's just now. You right. can't, you right. can't just make it now.
Right.
But there's a robot. Like, you have to like make, so I guess it makes a little bit more sense if this is like another apartheid take.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, bad job.
Yeah.
This whole entire movie was unnecessary. I don't get the whole exoskeleton.
They just thought it would be cool. They're like, yeah, let's make him a cyborg.
So, and again, like I said, I stopped paying attention after a while. Was there anybody else? And I know the one guy was like, or what's his name? Spider. He was like, oh, this is a version, whatever. It's like mm-hmm. a second, third generation one. Were there other ones? Like, were the other generations like actual robots? Or?
So, Charlton Copley's character had some cybernetic enhancements.
Okay.
I don't think we see anyone else with that.
No.
Also, can we talk about him?
What? Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about other roles he's played too since District 9. I feel like
he was an A-team, right?
Yes. I feel like Charlton Copley became famous playing this like mousy, you know, middle management dude who gets thrust into a weird situation. And I feel like he felt after that he needed to like reclaim his masculinity or something. And so like he does this, and I don't remember the A-Team movie at all.
I guess it
shows
Murdoch.
Wow. Okay. I saw Gringo because Charlize Theron was in it. No one mm-hmm. else saw that, but really? He plays like a badass spy guy. I feel like he doesn't like what he became famous for and is devoting the rest of his career to changing it.
He was worried he would be Michael Scott, so instead he became nothing.
Exactly.
Free Fire was really good.
I didn't see that.
With Brie Larson. Robin, where did you come into? Because you were the one who, when we landed on Elysium, I thought you were going to jump through the window. So, correct. Like, where were you coming in and where did a rewatch get you?
All right, so I watched this, like I said, when I lived in Cape Town, and I just remember like pacing angrily around my apartment, realizing what it was about and how poorly he had done this. I think this was also around the time that Searching for Sugar Man came out, that documentary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you guys saw that.
I didn't see it.
It's, I mean, it's a good documentary, but the thing that I hated about it is that it's made by white people and from the perspective of white people about how hard apartheid was for them because they couldn't buy the records they wanted.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
And so I was in a particularly primed place to be furious about white-centric apartheid stories.
Yeah.
So I hated it so deeply and truly. And it's also dumb. Like, look, even outside of, like, you know, my anger, it's just a bad movie.
My notes have, what if the Maltese Falcon made you president? Like, like, there's every twist in this movie is unnecessary.
Yeah.
The biggest of which is adding in this backstory where he was an orphan and he was,
oh my God,
platonic BFFs with the what's her name?
I don't think it's platonic. Frey.
Frey. And then she left to be marginally more successful than him. And
now he's found her again. And
they're going to have coffee until he gets nuked.
Like, there's, and then in that one scene when he sees her again, that reminds me about how much or why I really am annoyed by Matt Damon and his presence is that he plays this. He's that guy like it's this fake charm, mm-hmm. but it's just about wearing you down. Like all he wants, he's just it's just wearing you down. He's not a charming man. No. He's just like, oh, I'm just going to keep on all oh, shucksing at you. And I'm just going to keep on. Oh, no. Are you sure? Oh, now you're hurting my heart. Oh, you're hurting my feelings. Oh, can't we just maybe just and it's like, fine, whatever, dude. OK, yes. Mm-hmm. OK.
Yeah. He also is aggressively unhandsome in this movie.
Yes, he is.
And by the way, one of the like six inciting incidents that kicks off this story is when he has to go to the hospital for literally trying to joke around with a robot cop, not RoboCop.
No,
this you're being interrogated by someone who is both a cop and a robot. And you're like, oh, why didn't you get my joke about being bald? Because it's a robot and a cop.
Either one of those separately would yeah. have not gotten this joke or found that shit funny. But you put them together, you're automatically, you're lucky all you got was a broken arm, my friend.
I know. Like, then.
And then the other
you're
one. The, like
really the, asking the parole officer.
Right. He's like, are you being sarcastic and or abusive to me?
Why did the parole officer robot have human features and none of the other ones do?
You know, to make it nice and accessible.
Right, to make it feel a little bit more at home and welcoming when so, you're being interrogated by machinery.
Right. So going back, at the end of the day, this movie was like not as bad as I remembered it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to jump ahead to my rating, but it went up 10 points from what I would have guessed.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, what I would have guessed was like a 2. I mean, I liked this more than Divergent.
Did you?
Yeah. Not a lot more, but more.
Wow. That's I don't yeah. know.
Why? Yeah, what was it?
That's
what
a really it? Good question.
Justify so, that, please.
All right.
I need you to say more words.
I also like this more than Divergent.
So one thing is that I completely forgot that Diego Luna was in it. And
I do enjoy
find
him
just delightful in every way. So the 20 minutes that he was in, I was happier. I also liked William Fichtner's character. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's those are the it. Things. I don't know.
I like the middle action scene. The around trying to brain jack William Fichtner.
Yes.
That came together well.
Yes. But why does Charlton Copley have a sword? Rule of cool.
Yeah, exactly. And I was also like I was happy to see Diego
yeah.
pop up and it's like, oh, so you're literally just here to help Matt Damon mm-hmm. and sacrifice
and
yourself.
Get dead.
Right. Like he comes in there, like when they go see Spider, he's like, we shouldn't be here. This shit is wrong. And then he's like, all right, I'm gonna take this mission, but I choose my crew. Fucking Diego or whoever's coming with me. And he's like, or Julio's coming with me. Right. And Julio's like, I wanted to get the fuck out of here. Like, I'm not, what are you saying?
But he doesn't.
Right. He goes like, anyway.
Makes one little joke and then carries on and dies. But he's so charming and pretty. And oh, God, but his pigtails.
Those pigtails.
I thought, so this was the first time we've reviewed something where I was able to go back and read the review I wrote
oh,
when
that's
it came
fun.
Out.
Oh, interesting.
And the most interesting thing about it was I read that review and I was like, I don't know how I felt about this movie from reading the review. Like, I think I really wanted to like it. So there's a lot of like, it should have been good. But it didn't, it wasn't as good as it should have been, but okay. I think, like, for about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, you can hang on because the cast is mostly good, mm-hmm. there's good action sequences here and there, and it's just moving. The first yeah. hour moves. For the first hour, I'm like, this is okay, and then it's completely like, just get to whatever you're going to
yeah.
get to.
Do you enjoy Matt Damon usually? Like, do you like?
I think he's fine. I didn't like the Bourne. I don't really like the Bourne movies. I don't mind him being in a movie. I don't usually think he adds much.
He's not the reason you go see him.
No,
right?
Definitely not. Do you know the chain of who was supposed to play that character, by the way?
I saw that they offered it to Eminem.
Jason Bourne?
No.
Elysium.
Oh. Elysium Man. What was his name?
I don't know.
Max De La Costa.
Oh, yeah, this fake ass.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Wait a minute.
No, this, the first.
I hate that this is radio. I wish you could see Camilo's face right now.
Yeah. De La Costa.
I thought you were joking when you said that earlier.
No.
At some point, someone does it. We should just change it to Of the Coast because really, like, who's gonna buy it? This Neil Blomkamp first wanted Ninja, the South African rapper who was in Chappie, right? Oh. I didn't see Chappie, but having seen like
Chappie's real bad.
I've seen a D'Antwoord video, and I'm like, those people shouldn't be actors.
The Chappie is bad, but it is a good movie to hate watch. This is not. Also, my friend Annalie Mueller's in it.
Okay, that's nice.
In Chappie or in Elysium?
In Chappie.
Okay.
So he wanted Ninja. It didn't work out. Like, what the fuck else was Ninja doing? But no, they. And then the role was offered to Eminem, who allegedly was on board until Neil Blomkamp said he wouldn't move it from L.A. to Detroit.
Right.
And then Eminem was like, no, I'm out.
That was just too much.
So Matt Damon was the third choice behind two rappers.
What?
No, just, yeah, like, wrap your brain around that.
Like, this is also, like, Matt Damon was, like, really A-list at this
right,
point.
Right, exactly. It's like, okay, fine, I guess we'll just use Matt Damon.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure Matt Damon's the reason why anybody saw this damn thing in the theater.
The only thing I unabashedly like about Elysium is Jodie Foster got that role, which was written for a man.
Hmm. Because, oh, that's awesome.
Because at a certain point, she started telling her agent, stop looking for female roles, start looking for male roles.
I love Jodie Foster. Right?
Yeah.
I love her.
Damn, girl.
So,
love it.
Again, was it the best performance? Like, I guess the speech where she was arguing with the president
and
I don't know.
I was just too distracted by her lack of her come and go accent. And then there was, I enjoy her presence. Like, I like Jodie Foster enough. It's like, okay, she's on screen. I am enjoying what you're doing.
She's compelling.
Right, exactly.
Even when she has a bad accent, she's a compelling presence.
But
I didn't totally hate it. I think it's it flirted with mediocrity and then fell.
It flirted with mediocrity.
So let's rate it. The segment is called X-Rated until I come up with a better name.
I don't understand why you need a better name. I like this one.
Okay, X-Rated is good.
Just because Kliber doesn't like it, but he's not here.
He's not here.
He doesn't get to choose.
Oh, we forgot his thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron couldn't make it today. You know that he legitimately planned to be here because why the hell else would he have watched Elysium?
Absolutely.
Right, I can't believe, yeah.
He texted me earlier to say, and I'm going to go like halfway on a Kliber voice. I hate in movies that take place in the future that there's all this technology and everyone's in space, but people are still wearing jeans and the same things of our time now. Just look at this. It's stupid. It's so stupid. Art direction on Earth is so terrible in that movie.
Oh, I have one quick thing about the clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they put his cyborg parts in over his t-shirt? So he has to wear the same dirty t-shirt
Thank you.
For his whole life.
It's like so infected. Like I'm looking at blood stains all over it. This is... Yes, that was it was distracting and it was upsetting.
And I agree. I hope we move past t-shirts. No, t-shirts are great.
I do love a t-shirt.
He also said the whole plot of the ex-girlfriend, who's now a doctor, and her daughter, the whole movie should have been about trying to save her daughter. And then you have the conflict between she's a doctor, but she can only go so far to help her daughter on Earth and needs and becomes much more about healthcare. And that would be a better movie.
That would be a better movie.
Yes, that is a true statement.
Thank you for weighing in, Aaron. You'll be back next time, I assume.
I hope so.
But I forgot to ask him for a rating, and I don't feel like doing it now. So, Camila, give us a number.
15.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's
a movie. That's what that rating is. It qualifies as a movie. And also, like I said, 10 of those points is for William.
He was great. Robin?
20.
I feel very like I have no opinions on this podcast before. Because my whole range is from 38 to 54. As Sharky's Machine, I gave a 54. Divergent, I gave a 38. Kiss the Girls, I gave a 52. Elysium, I gave a 47.
Wow.
47,
that's high.
It's like a 5. Yeah, that's probably high. I'm not going to change it now.
That's fine.
No, it's fine. I mean, but you stick to what you believe in.
I don't know. I mean, I just have seen so many terrible movies.
Yeah, I mean,
that I'm like, this isn't completely down there.
It's just the fact that I like literally I was fighting to get through it, and there's not many movies where I want to just turn it off on several occasions. Most times, like, I will stick through this. I will finish this. It has to get better. Blah, blah, blah. But this, I don't care. I don't know what's happening. I don't care. I just want it over. So
the overall score is a 27.3, just barely avoiding being our worst movie yet. Divergent is a 22.
Oh, wow.
Also, for the record, I'm going to say Last Samurai, 66.
Really?
Wow.
I liked it. And The American, 55.
You don't think The American was... Like, I think I gave The American, like, an 8 when it came out.
Huh. that's one of those movies where I understand why other people would like it more than I did.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it that much. That's, it's very dry.
That's Elysium. Let's switch to You Can't Handle the Truth and talk about some other stuff that we've seen. I guess we should talk about the Oscars for
a minute. Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't seen anything because I watched three movies for this episode and also was finishing up the Oscars Death Race.
I did watch a documentary that I would like to talk about.
Which documentary? Let's talk about that.
The Horror Noir.
Oh, I watched that too. It's fantastic.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, so this is the documentary on black horror films. And it's based upon a book written by Dr. Robin Means Coleman.
Who's in the movie.
Yes. On the same name. And it's so educational as to go back. They go back all the way to the beginning of movies with like Oscar Micheaux and, you know, just the black presence in horror films. And then it goes on to the blacks who have made horror films. It's just a compelling, just like an interesting, just so educational. And I love every minute of it. And I will watch. I've seen it three times already. And I got to meet Dr. Coleman.
Really?
She was in town for the Black Bottom Film Festival at the August Wilson Center. And she is so delightful. Like, I love her so much. I want to be besties with her.
And, let's make it happen.
I know. Like, we're already friends on Facebook. She's amazing. She's so smart. And I would love to, sit in on her class that she teaches in Texas A&M. It's on Shudder.
It's on Shudder.
And, I was just going to say, I'm like, where is it streaming? Yeah. I don't have Shudder. Well, are you a horror movie person?
I am.
Oh, so.
And but I didn't have Shudder before this. Mm-hmm. You can get, a 7-day free trial.
But after that, it's $5 a month.
Like horror movies, though.
I know, but there's a lot in there. It may not be worth $5 a month, but there's so much in there that is, 80 years old or, a weird East Asian or European horror stuff or kind of cultural touchstones that you might still find yourself getting used to. It is less Netflix for horror and more
Filmstruck.
Filmstruck for horror. Yeah. Filmstruck RIP.
There's
for
also
horror.
A lot of, psychological thrillers and type of stuff.
Okay.
So it's a nice range.
Maybe
of
I'll do.
Type.
I really do want to watch this documentary. So I'll do the trial to watch it. Mandy. I haven't seen Mandy. I want to watch that.
If you get it on Shudder. Shudder has a collection of the movies that are referenced.
Right.
That you can, I guess I had never heard of Ganja and Hess.
Right.
Which is on Shudder and discussed in horror noir. And I never saw Tales from the Hood, which apparently is actually.
There are two of them.
I haven't seen either of these things.
It's anthologies, horror anthologies, based upon, and the director, I think his name is Rusty Cudnoff. I forget, but he's also a Pittsburgher.
Oh, cool.
And, he directed these films and they're on the outside, they're really campy or whatnot, but they tackle social justice issues in each one. And it's really the first one is really good. Mm-hmm. Second one, but
listen, I like Star Trek campy, but tackle social justice issues is my wheelhouse.
So there's a total recommendation.
There's also on the website graveyardsisters.com, which is the young lady who runs that website. She was also a producer, I believe, of this documentary. I think she was very instrumental in getting it made. She has a syllabus her website.
That's a great website name.
Yes, right? So this is a syllabus with books, the movies that are referenced. There's podcasts that Dr. Coleman is on. There's even a Spotify playlist where hip-hop meets horror. So yeah, I would absolutely check that
out. This is such a better conversation than us talking about the Oscars. So disregard. You all know what happened and you know that we don't like it.
Briefly.
He's like, but wait, there's more. I gotta get something off my chest.
I guess that now what we get is some very nice selections and some horrible selections from the Academy. It just so happens that in the past few years, Best Picture fell into the very nice. And this year kind of went the other way.
My God. I was surprised that, because I haven't talked to anybody that has seen Green Book and liked it.
Accurate.
I don't understand.
When I reviewed it, my big takeaway was this is a movie, but it's not an Oscar movie. It's got some good actors in it and it's a story and you can sit there and watch it and your grandma will like it.
Right.
But it's not some kind of statement on anything. It's just a movie. And so I'm baffled. But I heard One person with knowledge of the voting said off the record to some journalist, this had nothing to do with a preferential ballot. If it had been popular vote, Green Book would have easily won that too.
What?
Wow.
Because I guess, and the explanation I heard is the Academy's voters, again, average age 62, are not on Twitter.
Gotcha.
I think most of those people saw it and thought that was nice and had no idea that there was a significant backlash.
Right.
And they just wouldn't think about that on their own.
No, absolutely not. No, because, I mean, I guess you see that movie at face value. It seems like a perfectly nice movie about, you know, two men of different cultures and races becoming best friends in a time where nobody would have ever thought or approved of it.
Yeah. If this movie were made in 1983, I'd be like, okay, nice movie.
Right.
Like, in the same way, like, I don't know if you've ever seen In the Heat of the Night. Mm-hmm. Like, that is this plot, right? And there's no road trip. But, you know, a white guy and a black guy learn to like each other and understand more about their, about racism. That movie's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
But it's made in the 60s.
Right. And what I also was, because I still haven't seen it, and I don't know if I ever plan on it.
I would not.
Don't waste those 2 hours.
Right. And it's like, I was under the impression that Mahershala played the man who actually wrote the Green Book, who put that together.
That would be an interesting movie.
That's a much better movie.
Right. And then I learned that it was not. That's not what it was.
It has next to nothing to do with the Green Book. I mean... Like, he has it, somebody hands it to...
I don't think they reference it. It's just, open up my trusty Green Book.
No, just later they're at different hotels. Right. Like, that's it.
See, that doesn't make any... That's such a waste. It's such a waste, because that's a much better movie. Because, first of all, I didn't know anything about the Green Book until this movie came out.
And what a terrible... Like, that's such an interesting thing.
Right.
And what a terrible association that it has to have now. It's a shame.
I'm thrilled that Regina King won Best Supporting Actress.
Me too.
I wish that that wasn't the only Oscar for If Beale Street Could Talk, but I'm glad that there was one.
Right,
yeah.
Right. She deserved it.
And she looked amazing.
Oh, my God.
Love that dress.
Spike Lee's speech was amazing.
Yep.
Olivia Colman's speech was amazing. And as Glenn Close and Lady Gaga were higher on my ballot, I was still thrilled with that.
Yeah,
because
strong
it was,
field this year.
Yeah, it was surprising and delightful.
I haven't seen The Favorite, but I have watched her on... I'm watching Broadchurch now, and I love her on that TV show.
Yeah, she's very lovable.
Black Panther winning costume and production design was great.
Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
And score, original score.
And original score. There was a lot of good in there. Mm. It just,
didn't stick the landing.
They didn't stick the landing. And the
Rami getting best actor.
Yeah,
I'm
that was
okay
fine.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with him winning that. I know a lot of people hate that movie, but he was good in it.
He was very good in it.
He made it. That movie would have been nothing without him, but he was so good that it worked. I think the last couple of years, the things that pissed me off in the Oscars were down the card, and I loved what won Best Picture, and this was the opposite. So,
Okay.
I do have a question about Rami. I would totally love to have a conversation with this little man and whatever, but do you ever get the impression that maybe he's just like a little off? Like, he kind of like seems to me like he's always not quite there, and like he's like kind of staring off, and he's... I don't know, like either thinking about did he turn the stove off?
He strikes me as someone who has a very strong internal monologue.
Right.
Like, I don't know, I read some anxiety off of him at all times.
And then there's also like, and then to couple that with seeing all the pictures of people trying to help him fix his bow tie throughout the Oscars.
And also he fell off the stage. He has a hotter twin brother.
Does he?
Really?
An identical twin brother
who's
way hotter than him.
Wow. So I'm just
name is Sami. Sami.
I'm concerned about Rami sometimes. I worry about him. He's a nice boy, but I sometimes worry about him.
That's very kind of you.
I don't need a host for the Oscars anymore. I'm fine without it.
Oh, God. I didn't watch it all, but... I feel like it flowed, like the pieces I watched, of course, you don't need it. Why did we need a host all these years?
It just kind of cut out a distraction for me. And then, like, there were a number of legitimately funny chunks with the opening with Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph.
Yeah, I think having an opening monologue from the host is good. The part where they have to cut to the host to introduce the presenters, take that away.
Then they went to the bit with Melissa McCarthy and Brian Tyree Henry. That worked. The Awkwafina and John Mulaney thing worked.
Yeah.
So, like, But because none of those people were the host, I was scrutinizing it less and just enjoying it.
So keep the funny bits in, but spread the wealth.
Yeah. Just do that.
And yes, agreed. Rami's brother is way hotter.
Look him up.
Wow. Okay.
Let's draw the movie.
Let's do it.
After last week, I'm terrified. But I don't know if I'm cheering. I don't have a veto anymore, so I just have to live with it unless one of you...
done with the veto for 2019.
I know.
All right.
The number is 531. Again, this list has been updated to include recent number one movies in America, such as How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, this week's number one. 531. Oh, I don't know how to react because I have no idea what this movie is. From 1985, the name of the film is Invasion USA, starring Chuck Norris.
Yes.
Shut the front door.
Oh, man.
I guarantee you I have never seen this movie.
I am excited now.
I have never seen a Chuck Norris movie.
The first line in Wikipedia is a 1985 American action film starring Chuck Norris. It involves the star fighting off a force of Cuban-led guerrillas. Guerrilla fighters, not... That would be good. It's like if we had to go from
clarifying.
It turns out there are gorillas living in Cuba and now they're invading America. Arguably a better movie. But oh man. I'm pretty excited.
This is available on Google Play.
Yeah, we should at least make sure that there's a way to see the number one.
Also, I would like to point out that, I'm super excited that I did not have to pay to see Elysium. I watched it on FX.
Invasion USA. I've never seen a Chuck Norris movie. The longest I've seen him is like a stray episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. All right, we will be watching all 107 minutes. Okay, good. And it's not more than... 2 hours long. Invasion US. Oh, Aaron's going to be thrilled.
Yeah, this is his wheelhouse.
What should I tell him we drew? Sorry. It was, I don't know, Jerry Maguire. I'm looking at other things.
No, what is some teen.
We got the second Divergent movie. Sorry.
Twilight.
We got the third Twilight. Yes. Sorry. No, it's Invasion USA. Chuck Norris is going to kick people. So that's the next episode of the number one movie in America. Hope you join us again. Hey, we keep forgetting to say, please subscribe, rate, and review.
Yes.
All that good stuff.
Please subscribe, especially on Apple Podcasts. If you do go on Apple Podcasts, do leave a rating and a review. That helps people find us. If you use a different podcast app and you can't find this for some reason, how are you listening to it? But also, sometimes it's still appearing as You Can't Handle the Truth.
Okay.
So double check, but we're available everywhere. Sure. And... before we go, what was the number one song in America when Elysium briefly topped the box office charts? Again, it is August of 2013. Do we have any guesses?
Royals by Lorde.
Close, but no.
Okay.
That was like maybe a month later.
Work Bitch by Britney?
No, I think
that
that's...
amazing.
It's a great song. I don't think that's from this year. I will start by saying the song is almost certainly more problematic than Elysium.
Blurred Lines?
Correct. Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke.
Well, that was number one for like half of
year.
Right.
That was gigantic.
I should have guessed that.
What a week it was with Blurred Lines on the radio and Elysium at the box office. But hey, thankfully we're going back to the 80s next time on the number one movie.
This is
going to
be exciting.
Yep.